got to fall in love with the process. He's like, quit worrying about the outcome, fall in love with the process. And I tell that to this day to my clients, like, fall in love with working out, fall in love with eating right, fall in love with reading your books. Because at the end of the day, yes, you're going to get positive outcomes out of that. Yes, you'll make more money. Yes, you'll have a better body. Yes, you'll have better relationships. But that carrot is not going to make you really happy. It's really going to be the process that got you there.
Are you ready to unlock conversations of resilience, triumph, and transformation? Well, you're in the right place. This is the Knocking Doors Down podcast. Your host, Jason LaChance, where we dive deep into the journeys of those who have overcome life's toughest challenges and are sharing their experience, knowledge, and insight into how you can do just the same. If you're checking out the podcast for the first time, hit that subscribe button on whatever platform you're listening on, or hey, if you're on YouTube, hit that subscribe button, leave a thumb up and a comment on the video, because not only do I see it, but so do my guests. As you may or may not know, I'm in long-term recovery for addiction, and I've struggled with some mental health issues. And through that, I became an advocate for sobriety and mental health. As well, I'm a certified recovery coach. And my guest is Joe Ligavan. Joe is the co-author of the 5-star rated book, The Storyteller. Joe spent over a decade working with incarcerated individuals to find their true self inside that's been masked by violence, anger, trauma, and so much more. Joe personally struggled with addiction, but was able to find recovery and transcend that. Joe suffered various traumas throughout his life, including losing his sister to depression and a drug-induced suicide. That led Joe down a path of transformation and building the life that he has today. And as he'll say, it's not perfect, but it's worth living. Now married, a father, and helping others in his coaching business, Joe truly is knocking doors down. We discuss eliminating the victim mentality, changing the story you tell yourself about yourself. We also talk how overcoming your limiting beliefs will only enhance your life and the way you treat others as well. We get into living a life that isn't perfect, but worth living, and being deserving of thriving in that life. And we talk about rituals and routines and how they can help you thrive in life financially, physically, spiritually, and mentally. Joe Ligavan, thanks for joining me on Knocking Doors Down. Looking good, brother.
Oh, I'm trying, dude. I just threw on a shirt, and I mean, I haven't even took a shower yet, so that's how we roll. But that's what's great about podcasts. Nobody knows that, you know. Nobody can they can just see you. Hey, so, but I'm happy to be here, man.
That's all right. Same, getting kids off to school and everything. It was like, oh yeah. Damn. Okay. So what do I got? A Lewis Hamilton t-shirt and let's go. So it works, man.
Exactly, brother.
I always start my day off with gratitude, and I like to start my conversation. So three things you're grateful for today.
Yeah. Awesome, man. I think the first thing is that I've figured out what works for me, you know, and, a lot of these things I think are ubiquitous. Like what works for me is going to work for other people. And one of them is like a gratitude habit. And I'm thankful for my habits, my daily rituals that keep me in kind of a good mental space, because just as much as it's important to exercise our body, we got to exercise our mind, right? So I'm grateful that I have these habits. Number two, I'm grateful. We just got back from Bali. We took a trip out with Jackson Tippett. If you're familiar with the name, he's pretty big on Instagram. We did a bunch of collab stuff out there with him, and he's real into the mental health addiction space as well. And I'm, you know, grateful for my family. I've got a little boy and a wife, and that is everybody's healthy and happy. So those are my three gratitude lists right now.
Oh, hey, congratulations on the little boy. That's fatherhood changes you. People go, oh no, it doesn't. Oh, bull. It changes everything.
It really does. And you got some kids yourself then?
Yeah, I got two teenagers. So it's it's joy. They're awesome, but it's also the teenagers, you know. Oh,
well, shoot. It's just like anything else. Like, it's like, you know, there's good and bad, right? Like, I was talking to somebody, like, with, when it comes to relationships, you get intimacy, but you lose freedom. Right. Mm. And so like with fatherhood, you get more responsibility, but you also get a certain type of love that, you don't necessarily get when you're just hanging out with your friends and doing that type of thing. So there's, you know, you definitely give up certain things, you know, in order to have a kid. But to me, that love is definitely irreplaceable, and I'm happy to have that experience as well. But there are certain things that, you know, there are days when you're like, oh man, I don't think I can have any more. I think, yeah.
Yeah. I'm closer to 50 than 40, and there ain't no way.
Oh, wow.
Doing it again.
Oh, wow. So. Would never have guessed. Yeah.
But yeah. Rituals, routines, you're right. I want to talk about, you know, as before we hit record, sharing some of my history. And and I'm a person that now, and I've talked about this, that I have to have those rituals and routines, because I've learned so much to not be able to go back to the life I used to have. Like, right. I'm all about the present I have now and the future I want. And so there's no way to go back to the BS ways that I used to be.
Yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely. And I definitely could relate on that. And one thing I'll tell, you know, my clients when I'm talking to them is like, you could take the happiest person in the world, give them terrible habits, and you'll talk to the most depressed person in the world, and vice versa. Right. And so a lot of times I think people think, when it comes to physical health, we're all aware that, like, okay, if I work out, I eat right, I can change my body. But when it comes to mental health, it's just kind of like this intangible, it's in the ether, like we don't know anything, we're kind of still figuring it out. But it's like, no, we know if we do certain things on a daily basis, think in a certain way, have certain rituals and habits, we're going to be thinking in a more clear way, a more beneficial way. And I know for me, if I get off my habits, my rituals, no matter how much money I got, no matter how many positive people I have in my life, no matter how many goals I've achieved, I'm going to feel like crap, and vice versa. Even if I lose everything, if I've got my habits, I've got everything. So I can definitely relate on that.
Yeah. Well, then I think, you know, people, I don't know, maybe it's ills of society that we're in now. They want to, you know, well, I just want to be free and have, it's like, I don't think people grasp the freedom that comes with rituals and routines.
Right.
You know, we've got so much coming at us all the time, be it on our phones, right, or societal standards, norms, things we think we're supposed to do and everything else. And there's something about settling in those rituals and routines that allows me to continue to have like an amazing freedom.
Yeah. And that's a great way to put it, because that is usually the hang up, especially with the younger generation, is I just want to do what I want to do. And I was the same way when I first got out of like high school. It's kind of like, okay, I was under the thumb for, you know, 12 years or whatever it is until I got out of high school. I just want to do what I feel like doing. And what I discovered after several years of that is when you do what you just feel like doing, you become a slave to your senses. You become a slave to your feelings, as opposed to actually having free will, you know. And free will comes from making a conscious choice of what you want to do. And what you want to do may not be what you want to do in the moment, right? Because when we're talking about, like, you'll hear a lot of talk about self-love, and it kind of gets thrown around like, go get a pedicure today, go have some wine today, go get some chocolate today, right? And that, of course, is self-love in the moment to my present self. But what about your future self? You know, are you doing things to love your future self? Because we want to love all aspects of ourselves, our past self, our present self, and our future self. And you got to keep all those in mind, because if my rituals and habits are off, even though I'm self-love right now in the moment, I'm neglecting my future self's happiness, you know? Right. So it does give you that freedom. And when the senses and the feelings are taking over and just deciding for you, you give away your freedom. Even though you feel like you're free, it's a kind of the opposite, as we both know how addiction can just take over our free will. And we're no longer making decisions based on what we want. We're making decisions based on how the addiction is causing us to chase a feeling, or chase the dragon, as they say.
Yeah, I just finished actually this morning reading this great book, author Dan Ariely, and it's called Predictably Irrational. Matter of fact, the TV show The Irrational is based on his writing. It's out there now. And he really closed with a great statement about how we think we're in the driver's seat of everything, and not understanding how subconscious our brain works. It's thousands and thousands and thousands of year old machinery up between our ears. And there are a lot of things, like you bring up the point. I mean, I was a guy that in my addiction and in reflection, childhood was looking for those dopamine hits, those endorphin hits, all those little things, and thinking, oh, this is a good way of living because I felt good in the moment, not understanding how crappy I was going to feel on the back end.
Exactly. Absolutely. What a great point there. And that, yeah, I think there's a lot of people in that world right now that they're saying, well, I'm doing everything to feel good and I don't feel good and I don't know why. And then those type of people, they do get into some sort of discipline, some sort of ritual, and then they start feeling better. And it's kind of like, it's definitely the antithesis of what we kind of assume. You know, it is kind of an irrational way of thinking right there, that if we don't take care of our present self, you know, that we're not going to be happy. But really, like, postponing gratification, all these type of mindsets, that's what's really getting big right now. And a lot of it comes down to our society. We're in a society where we can obviously instantly gratify ourselves in any form or fashion, and it has not made us happy as much as we think it will. It really hasn't. And so that there's been this big push with the David Goggins, the, you know, Andy Frisellas, the Wes Watsons, who is my original coach, these type of individuals who teach these highly disciplined practices and these highly disciplined rituals in order to create more happiness for yourself. And it just, it seems like a paradox there, but I've seen it in my own life, and it sounds like you have as well.
Yeah, I have. And bringing up Goggins, he said something, I think it was with Huberman on his podcast, that was like a huge light bulb. It was like, oh my God, life got brighter. He said, you know, people see it as the dangling carrot at the end of the stick, you know, for the jackass walking. And he goes, there's no carrot. It's just a stick. Stop the mindset about the carrot. There's no carrot.
It's just a stick.
And it was like, oh man, it's just the work.
And that's so true.
Right?
And you even go back to, like, I don't know if you're into other spiritualities or anything, but like the Bhagavad Gita is like the oldest spiritual text, one of the oldest spiritual texts that we have, you know, historically. I think it's 6,000 years old. And essentially in that book, you know, Krishna is talking to Arjuna, and he tells them that you got to fall in love with the process. He's like, quit worrying about the outcome, fall in love with the process. And I tell that to this day to my clients, like, fall in love with working out, fall in love with eating right, fall in love with reading your books. Because at the end of the day, yes, you're going to get positive outcomes out of that. Yes, you'll make more money. Yes, you'll have a better body. Yes, you'll have better relationships. But that carrot is not going to make you really happy. It's really going to be the process that got you there, you know? Those things are great. Like, I don't think I'm as hardcore as Goggins, where I'm going to, you know, maybe wake up at 3 a.m. and run in the snow and stuff like that. I have a little more balance than that, but I do see his point and his method there to teach people, like, fall in love with the work, and you will really, you know, the outcome will take care of itself at that point.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think it's funny how you bring up God. Yeah, David Goggins is gnarly. I question, like, God, is his method even really, like, healthy, or is it just whatever it is? But I don't want to get off on him. But the reason I say that is sometimes I think, I know for me, I was living a lifestyle in a direction of negativity that required actions of the complete opposite on the other end.
Yes. And we need that extremism in order to pull us out of it, you know. But I don't think ultimately that's the goal of life, is to be that extreme. But I think when we are on the other end of the spectrum, it takes somebody like Goggins to kind of pull us out of that and be like, oh, wow, he's got an amazing mindset here. And you know, as they always say, it's the middle path that's really going to be, you know, because I like to enjoy my body. I like to enjoy good food. I like to enjoy cool experiences. I like money. I like relationships. I like, you know, I like all the things that are, I guess you could call, materialistic. But on the other end of the spectrum, I also like the process. You know, I also like working hard. I also like having positive habits and being disciplined and putting myself through things that don't feel good in the moment so I can achieve something in the future. But yeah, I think sometimes we need that extremism in order to pull us out of just the instant gratification world that we've kind of been succumbed to by our own, you know, our own laziness and our own society that has essentially promoted that.
Yeah. Well, and especially, I mean, you think about addiction, it's a, you know, when I've coached some people, and I usually don't work with anyone that's not yet at a state of sobriety, and I'm like, hey, 90 meetings in 90 days. And they're like, why so many? I'm like, you easily used and drank 90 days in a row.
Yeah.
Why does it sound so extreme to you? I'm right. Asking for 2 hours of your time. You would stay up for days.
So, yeah. Yeah.
You know, I think we have to get anything that kickstarts us into that opposite direction. I always think of it like, you know, something stuck in orbit. Well, you need a big boost of rockets to get that ship out of orbit and get it set off in a direction. And I think we right. have to do that.
Right. And it's a good analogy I have for that with my clients, because it's obviously the same thing with diet. You know, if somebody's way overweight, it's like, let's get you on a very strict macro plan. But my goal is not to have them on that plan the rest of their life. You know, my goal is to give them the structure they need now so they can eventually grow out of it. And it's similar to like my son, we have him in a crib right now, right? Like, and that crib keeps him in his bed. It keeps him from falling out of his bed. It keeps him from hurting himself. And it keeps some structure on them. But if I keep him in that crib till he's 18 years old, it's going to become a cage, you know? And so, but at this point, it's what he needs. And then eventually he's going to outgrow that cage. And maybe like when you first start on the sobriety course, you need a very strict regimented cage, if you will, until eventually you do start kind of getting your own, you know, confidence back and your own self-discipline back, where eventually if you stay in that cage too long, it will kind of hinder your growth and hinder your ability to enjoy a more balanced life. But at the beginning, I think it's extremely important to have that structure just so you can push past those limitations, you know?
Yeah, nailed it. I couldn't agree more, Joe. I consciously reflected on the fact that the, you know, 12-step rooms saved my life and the wonderful people there, but there became a time where I needed to live life beyond it. I needed right. to get back out to where I could put some of these things to the test that, okay, I believe I have new coping skills for situations, but I'm not going to know it unless I'm in the situation, you know?
Absolutely. We need the test.
Knocking Doors Down by Carlos Vieira, now available wherever you get audiobooks.
I wasn't done partying, and I didn't want the binge to end. I think I knew that when I finally got home, I'd have to face what I had done, and I wasn't ready to do that. Being responsible for my actions wasn't something I was looking forward to. I had abandoned my wife and baby, my family, and my business. I wanted to avoid the shame of returning to what I had left behind. Even though I was not yet going home, I wasn't sure I had enough resources to continue the binge.
Click the link in the podcast description to find out more.
And that's why I like the coaching world a lot is I like to take people from, you know, sometimes we can take people from negative whatever, we'll say negative 10 to zero, which is like that person who's doing some hard drug on a continual basis or drinking too much or screwing up his whole life. And we just want to take him to zero. We just want him to stop doing those things. But eventually, you know, you want to take the zero to 10. You want to take that person onto a life of adventure, of experience, of joy, of creating different things and stuff. And in the coaching world, that's what I love. It's not just me dealing with extremely sick people. It's me dealing with people who may be sick at one time, but now they're kind of like, they're getting their bearings and they're like, hey, I want more out of life. And we can kind of work on that, because that's really the goal of you know, everything. I was working with a guy recently, and he was a very intense addict. And then he was talking about, well, I just want to get to a 9-to-5 job. I just want to have a normal life and stuff. And I was telling him, those are good goals, but I'm like, you're going to get bored of that very quickly. And I think, and I was very honest with him, because I'm the same way. Like, I am not going to be happy in just a very, you know, like if I'm just doing my 9-to-5 and watching TV and going home, like I'm going to be extremely bored. And I think a lot of addicts are these type of extreme personalities that they do need to do more. And so I was telling him, I was like, look at some other options, look at some other things. Once you start getting out of that addiction zone, that actually make you excited, actually give you the same stimuli that you were looking for through the drug, that maybe you can get a high through, you know, working out or making money or doing something that brings like a different type of high, because you just going to work and making your paycheck every week, like after a few months of that, you're just going to go back into the addiction because you're not getting something that you're really craving in life, which may be adventure. It may be, you know, creation and doing different things in their life. So I like to take people past just the stage of getting them out into something where they're actually creating a life they enjoy.
Agreed. Agreed. And you know, connectivity for sure is offered up. But I want to ask you, what led you down this path of wanting to do this work and work with others?
Oh, what a great, I appreciate the question. And ultimately, I think number one, it was my own suffering that I've been through. And a lot of it was internal. You know, I struggled a lot when I was young with depression and things like that. And I've struggled with anxiety and those type of things. And then addiction myself, you know, I was in the age, I'm 39 now, but, you know, that's when the pills really came on the scene, the opiates. And that was a big thing that a lot of my friends got into. I've had multiple friends overdose and die, and I've had, you know, multiple friends in jail and those type of things. And I was addicted at one point as well. And so I think that was kind of part of it. But then about 10 years ago, my only sibling took their own life. And was on about 9 different substances when they did it, and when she did it. And that was very eye-opening to me, because it was like, man, this can really affect our future. And our, and for me, it was like, I need to take this mental health stuff seriously and really put it into practice, you know, in a high level. And so for me, that kind of pushed me to really study and learn as much as possible. And luckily, we're in the age of information. There's so much information out there where, you know, 20, 30 years ago, it's like there might be a couple good books on mental health and you'd have to search for them. Or now you can type in, you know, some very good habits and find them instantly, you know, on the internet. And so it's a good time to be alive if you are utilizing that information in a positive way. So that was kind of my push. And what I saw from that was, I became extremely mentally strong to such a degree that a lot of my friends would look to me for answers on their own problems. And they saw that I was very emotionally stable. And all it was I was implementing these practices. You know, I was implementing gratitude. I was implementing goal setting. I was implementing disciplined routine. And they would be like, man, how do you do this? Or how do I work through this? And so I just kind of naturally fell into the coaching space through that, where I felt like I had kind of a gift in that sense, you know, from just repeating. And what I think sometimes stops people from maybe coaching is they look at themselves and be like, well, who am I, right? Who am I to teach anybody anything? And for me personally, I've still got my own problems. I've still got my own addictions. I've still got my own issues, right? Like I'm far from perfect. But I know I share what has worked for me. And if I share what has worked for me, then at least I'm doing a service, you know, at least I'm doing something that helps people to that degree. And maybe there's higher levels to that, and people will graduate from what worked for me to something better. But when I can at least repeat what has worked for me, I'm just a very good pointer at that point. I'm not necessarily pointing to myself and being like, be like me, I've got all the answers, I'm this enlightened individual who's perfect. It's more like, hey, these things took me out of this negative state. If you try them, maybe they will as well, you know?
Yeah. First, I'm so sorry about the loss of your sister. I can't, my brother just turned 50 yesterday, and he's one of the people I admire the most in this world. And so I couldn't imagine. So, you know, my condolences. I know it's been a decade, but that never gets, excuse me, our heart never gets filled up there again. You with the opioids, was it something recreational that led to that? And I hear so many people, it was an injury and they got prescribed, or even a dentist appointment from pain. Yeah. And that's, you know, took over their lives.
I think for me, it was just recreational, you know, it was around at that point, and they were abundant. They were very abundant at that point. It was before, you know, now we have all the laws against it and stuff, but they were just everywhere. And I remember one of my friends, he was saying he, you know, it's so funny how he rationalized things, you know, but he goes, these are FDA approved, you know, like these are great, man. It's like a high with no risks. Cause look at their FDA, you know, or whatever. And that was like his rationalization, but so for me, it was just recreational. And I think what, you know, any drug does ultimately is just kind of numb our mind, right? Like, I do work in the jails, and I've been doing that for 10 years. I work with inmates and kind of do like spiritual counseling in there, I guess I would say, you know, and I work with, a bunch of different like spiritual groups in the area of Denver. And what I find is a lot of these people, their minds beat them up to such a high degree that they need something to numb that mind, right? Like nobody jumps off a bridge because they break their arm. You know, it's because of something going on in their mind, the internal suffering. You know, emotional suffering is way worse than physical suffering. That's why a lot of people will put their bodies through physical suffering in order to avoid emotional suffering. You know, you get the people who cut themselves, or they get the people who drink too much, or whatever it is. Like, drinking too much is not a pleasant experience. You know, like, it is physically very hard on the body in multiple ways, you know, being hungover, all that stuff. But they are struggling so much with their emotional state that they're trying to numb that to a high degree. And so what I noticed with the opiates was it would put me in a state of just kind of not caring so much about what my mind was thinking. And luckily now I've got a lot of techniques to not care what my mind is thinking. When my mind is calling me a terrible person, or my mind is throwing guilt on me, or my mind is beating me up about something I should have done, could have done better, or whatever it is, I've got these different techniques. And for example, like, we all have that voice, you know, our inner critic, right? And our inner critic is telling us you're not good enough, you're never going to make it, you suck, you know, those type of things, right? And one of the techniques we'll use in NLP is we'll find that voice in the person's mind, and we'll give it a voice of, like, say, SpongeBob SquarePants. We'll say, okay, this voice now is, I want you to imagine SpongeBob SquarePants. That's your critic. And SpongeBob is saying, you're a piece of crap, you know, blah, 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 like, in this little high voice. And you're kind of like laughing it off, right? Because I don't think we're ever going to get rid of negative thoughts. I don't think we're ever going to get to a place where there's no more negative thoughts. But we can get to a place where we stop believing them. You know, and if we stop believing them, then they won't affect us as much. And it's not necessarily what we're thinking that is affecting us. It's what we're believing, you know. And so when these negative thoughts come in, like, you're never going to have a good future, you're a piece of crap, you're a horrible person. If that comes in and you just go, nah, I don't believe that, it's just going to walk out the other end and you're going to think of something new. But if you hold on to that and go, wow, that's a valid point, I am a piece of crap, I do suck, and here's all the reasons why, and here's this long list of things that line up with that, then you're going to hold on to that thought for a long time. But if you can imagine SpongeBob telling you that thing, you're going to be like, you're going to kind of laugh it off. So but you know, with these type of addictions, you know, when it comes to opiates or different things, it would just kind of numb the brain and put me in a state of peace, which luckily now I've got, you know, different methods to kind of bring me to that state of peace naturally, I guess you would say.
Yeah, I gotta do it, because I used to do, my kids loved SpongeBob, so I could just imagine. I need to use that next time, just to, oh, Jason, you know.
Exactly. I love it.
That was one of the big, and still is for me, a big challenge, and I think it's wonderful what you just shared, because I came to realization that those negative things that I was telling myself, the story about myself that I tell myself, wasn't in my voice. So it means that it was planted there. And it happens to so many of us, either through actual verbal abuse, or, you know, put downs, whatever it is, or the traumas that occur and all these things. And I think the sooner we can, like, I needed a pep talk the other day, brilliant man, Dr. Rob Kelly. He just, you know, like, he's like, anybody struggling, shoot me a DM. And then, hey, Dr. Rob, kind of having a lot of self-doubt right now. And he, you know, expletive deleted. You're awesome. What are you talking about? You've helped save people's lives. Come on, you're a champion. You're doing God's work. You have a purpose that is greater than you, you know, let's get rolling. And I was like, oh yeah. And the reason I say that is mentorship. I mean, you've had some amazing mentors, and now being a mentor, but I'm assuming you still have mentors. I know I do.
Mm-hmm. No, that's brilliant. And it's so cool you can reach out to people. And I think that's what's good, is being vulnerable enough to say that you go through those moments, because I have them too. I mean, like, I'll still wake up in the morning after I, you know, coach 10 people the day before, and I just helped 10 people, and I'll wake up and I'll be struggling with the exact same thing that next day. I'll be like, man, I suck, you know, like, I'm not, you know, and so that never really goes away, but it's just like taking a shower. You know, we need the constant reminders. And that's why you'll see the most successful people in the world, if they do not have a way of giving back, they self-destruct, right? Like the Elvis Presleys of the world, the Whitney Houstons, whatever. But then you see the people who are giving back in some form or fashion, and that cycle actually continues because they realize that them giving back is actually helping themselves. And I know for me, being in the coaching space, I help myself continually as that cycle continues, because I can kind of mentor somebody, but I'm also listening to myself speak and saying, well, yeah, maybe I do need to have a little more compassion for myself. Maybe I do need to have a little more, you know, empathy for myself and not think that I'm the worst person in the world, because, you know, so it's great to have those mentorships, but it's also great to mentor. And a lot of my clients, I end up kind of teaching them to do the same thing. I'm like, hey, go find somebody who was at your point a month ago. Like, you're at this point now, you may be at a level three or whatever, but go find a level one that you can mentor. And as soon as they do that, they start really feeling better and the cycle continues. And that's my biggest goal with this, is to create more people that, you know, the ripple effect continues. I don't want them to be dependent on me their whole life. I want them to eventually grow past me and be their own, you know, kind of light to this world as well. So,
yeah. And community is so vital. I mean, we, you know, we all experience, you know, to some degree when it's the world shut down and we're told just stay in your doors and everything else.
Right.
And, you know, I actually had a brief relapse during that time. And granted, hey, I'm a fortunate person. I was able to go, examine quickly why and ask for that help in the midst of it.
Yeah.
But it's so vital to be connected to other people.
So vital. And so many people feel alone nowadays. That's the thing I see, because I'll put out like, what are you struggling with? I'll ask a question on my Instagram, and I'll get so many people who just say like, I feel alone. I feel lonely. I feel like nobody's there for me. And I think one of the major problems with our society now is there is so much information that everybody's got an opinion on everything, right? And that's great, right? It's a good time to have an opinion because you can research things and stuff. But opinions are infinite, right? Like if me and you are going to try to connect on an opinion about life, it's going to be very difficult to connect, because you may have a different political belief. You may have a different religious belief. You may have a different view on what this is or what that is. And it's an infinite number of opinions out there, but emotions are ubiquitous. We both know what heartbreak feels like. You know, we both know what feeling lonely feels like. We both know what feeling sad feels like. And when you connect on an emotional level, that's when you really feel connected. And so in this world where everybody's got their formulated opinion, people actually are disconnecting more and more and more, because it's like, no, I'm a Republican, you're a Democrat, so we can't be friends. It's like, hey, we're both humans and we're both going to die. And we both are going to lose people. We're going to die, you know, and we're both going to go through struggles. Why don't we connect on that level as opposed to our temporary political beliefs right now? You know, and everybody's trying to you know, draw the line in the sand and say, this is right, this is wrong, and this is, I believe this and I believe that. And we actually end up getting more and more separated by that. But if we can kind of push those things aside and just say, well, let's try to relate on our human experience, you know, whatever that is, regardless of your race or your gender or your political beliefs, let's just bond on being a human and being born and dying and having to go through this human experience together. Let's bond on that level. And then you start to feel less alone, you know, and that's the thing I work with the people who come in and saying, like, when they say, I feel lonely, I'll say, well, me too. You know what I mean? Like, me too. I feel that exact same way. Or I feel sad, or I feel like I'm not worth it. Yeah, me too. You know what I mean? And as soon as they hear that, they feel less alone in that feeling. And so I think that's a big problem with our society, is we're trying to bond on opinions rather than emotions. And once we start bonding on emotions, I think a lot less people are going to feel alone in this world.
I agree with you. I know that when I struggle with that, you know, one of the things that I did do in my recovery as well, you know, surrounding the pornography struggle, was do some Sex and Love Addiction Anonymous. And a wonderful lady, she's been on the podcast a couple times, Breanne Davis, she really helped me with the mindset of, you know, your greatest soulmate is the person in the mirror. And I find that the more I strive for authenticity, which is really hard, I'm a recovering people pleaser, you know,
sure.
I want everyone to like and love me. And I've had to learn to be like, nah, F it. That's okay. Not everybody's going to. And it's actually a favor. But really trying to connect with who I am, what I like, what I enjoy about myself. And I find less loneliness. I mean, there's going to be times. I think we just have to accept we're never going to go an entirety of our life where we never feel a little bit lonely.
Sure, sure. Mm-hmm.
So,
but that's a great point, is really connecting to yourself. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I think that's part of the work. I mean, I think that's part of that daily challenge. You know, you're big into not only your mental and emotional fitness, but your physical fitness. And so those things that, you know, at times maybe we're being more of a spiritual being, and at other times maybe we're being more of a human being, having a human experience. And it's I think we fluctuate between those things. And so I can identify, you know, what is the loneliness I'm feeling? Is it a human loneliness? Is it a spiritual loneliness? And so I make sure I have accessibility to both of those things, be it through communication and connectivity with other humans or higher power.
Absolutely. And what a great point there. And the point I liked too that you said is like, that these things do get better, you know, and I can relate as well, because the things I used to struggle with, like, I always kind of give this as an example, is like, I used to go from like maybe a 0 on the emotion scale to a 6. And that's kind of where I lived. You know, we all have like an emotional home we like to go back to. And if I would get to like a level 6, I'd be like, wow, I'm really happy. And then something would knock me back down to like a 2 or 3. And I'd be kind of depressed again. And every once in a while I hit a 0 where I'm like in a hopeless state, in a very negative state. And now I kind of exist from like a 6 to a 10. Like I literally, my emotional range is a lot higher. So things do get better. And it's important for people to realize that. It's just like working out. Like you could start out 400 pounds and have all these different issues. And you could even have like a thyroid problem, right? And same with, like, similarly, people could have a mental health problem where they don't, their brain chemistry doesn't work right or whatever. And that's similar to somebody having a thyroid, but that doesn't mean you can't get better, you know? And I think a lot of times people will look at the mental health space and just say, oh, well, it's just a chemical imbalance and I can't do anything about it. Well, we are literally creating our chemicals as we think. Like, we know that. Like, if I run up behind you and scare you, you're going to release adrenaline because of the chemical, you know, brain synapses that happens when you get scared. And so if you are thinking in a certain way, which that's the big thing about cognitive behavioral therapy, is your thoughts are creating your emotional states. So if you can look at your thoughts and kind of analyze them and say, is this a rational thought? Is this thought going to lead me to more peace? Or is this thought going to lead me to a place of victimhood and depression? And really try to choose the better of the two, your chemicals are going to alter, you know, your brain chemistry is going to alter. And so you can definitely make your brain work better, just like our bodies can work better. And that guy that was 400 pounds, who's now 200 pounds, he knows that, right? And we can see it externally, but because we can't really see the mind, as it were, it's more intangible. People kind of neglect the fact that you can get mentally better if you implement certain habits on a daily basis.
Have you dug into the archives of past Knocking Doors Down podcast episodes? The Knocking Doors Down podcast archive is available to you for free. Check it out. Here's a snippet from when Charlie Sheen was on the podcast.
AA is not the best place for a famous atheist. I kept looking for that fucking chapter. What, you know? So yeah, but it's not a one size fits all.
Sure,
you know, it's like saying that we all think the same. Like our brains are built the same. They're just not.
Right. Yeah.
There's such uniqueness involved.
Check out this episode and so many more in the Knocking Doors Down archive. And while you're at it, hit that subscribe button, give this video a thumb up, leave a comment, and share with somebody else that you know will get value out of the Knocking Doors Down podcast. For me, I know that the recovery acronym of HALT works. Hungry, angry, lonely, tired. Like, okay. Why am I being kind of a crabby ass right now? Okay, or is it any of these four factors? You know, what is it? The stress level of work, and is that stress level that I'm thinking I have reality, or is it the thing that I'm just simply placing upon myself? Of again, back to those negative self talk and negative self image, and you know, it's And it's work. It's like, I think people sometimes think that there's just a turnkey, it's fixed. And it's my perception. Maybe tell me if it's worked different from you, but I've just been able to identify, look, I have these certain ways of being. And with that, I'm working on developing stronger tools to quickly correct those ways of being.
100%. Yep. 100%. Absolutely. And that's the shadow work, you know, and a lot of people are like, when you say that term shadow work, it's like, oh, that's what does that mean? You know, it sounds kind of weird or it sounds kind of out there. And all it is thinking about thinking, you know, you're thinking about how you're thinking, you're taking a step back. And instead of just reacting to something, you're thinking about how you're reacting to something. And then more important, you're thinking, is that a logical way? Is that way of reacting going to benefit me in the long term? Or is that going to put me in a negative emotional state? So taking that time to self-reflect on how you think, why you think, and why you have, you know, done these things, I think is such a valuable process. But as opposed to, and you'll see people who never do shadow work because they're still in reaction mode, you know, and those people can be 70, 80, 90 years old, and they're still just, they just instantly react. They have a negative reaction to something and they don't take the time to look at it. And then you'll meet younger people who are very self-reflective. And they have a very, like, you know, different mental state because they've done that shadow work. So I think maturity comes to down to really looking at how we think, why we react the way we do, and analyzing. And it's not like it's this is bad, this is good. And I think with our like kind of background of looking at everything through like a judgment lens, like this is a bad thing, this is a good thing, that kind of hinders people from looking internally because they feel like if I look internally, I'm going to see some darkness and I don't want to see it. So I'm not going to do the shadow work. That's usually what holds people back. It's not that they're scared of self-awareness. They don't have enough compassion to have self-awareness on themselves. Because if you have compassion on yourself, you will look at yourself without judgment. And the judgment isn't just saying, well, everything's good, everything, it doesn't matter what I do. No, the judgment, you're looking at it with discernment and saying, this is leading me to suffering. This is leading me to peace. It's not good or bad. It's not evil or whatever. And I'm going to look at myself and say, I'm an evil person. You're just going to look at yourself and say, these thought patterns are leading me to suffering. Therefore, why don't I alter that? Or these physical patterns are going to lead me to happiness or whatever. Why don't I do more of those things? And so having compassion on yourself is really the precursor to self-awareness. And I think if you don't have compassion on yourself, you will never take that time to reflect. And when I'm working with the inmates, especially, I see in them, you think you're going to meet a lot of sociopaths and a lot of terrible people. You will see people who have a tremendous amount of guilt. And that guilt is so built up in them that they've never taken the time to look within. They just always look outwards. It's my celly, it's the government, it's the police. They did it to me, and they're very, you know, outward projecting. But, you know, that it's psychology 101, that if you have guilt inside and you have negativity inside, you have to do something with it. Yeah. And if you don't look within and forgive yourself and have compassion on yourself, the next step is to project it outwards. So it's just psychology 101 to look at people who have zero self-reflection, very, very low shadow work, and realize that they don't have a lot of empathy or compassion for themselves within to do the shadow work in the first place.
It's the irony of how we treat ourselves and how it bleeds out into how we interact in the world, right? It's weird. And I like it. And thank you for bringing up discernment. That's been something I've really been working on, you know, over 3 years of continual sobriety, about seven total. And it's for me, it's discernment's been huge because I see myself making more empowering decisions over disempowering decisions.
What a great thing. And with your own walk, like, what was that like to kind of self-reflect on yourself and look at yourself? Was that kind of a scary process? Was that something that took a lot of, you know, internal kind of compassion and stuff like that? Was that something that you kind of worked with on your own self-reflective journey?
Oh God, yes. Thank you for asking. It felt insurmountable at times. But it was the most necessary thing. And I actually had a buddy of mine, great guy, Matt Gardner, take me down some story work and really focus on that story I was telling myself about myself and thus how I was operating in this world. And it was painful. but it was necessary because, I mean, you know, you get in the gym, you ain't going to build up bigger biceps without some pain. I mean, literally the muscle fibers snap, break down and build up bigger. And it's the same kind of thing with this, that process that I had to go through. It was the breaking down the weak parts of it to build stronger
exactly.
parts.
Yeah.
That's what it was. And I'm so grateful for it. And yes, it did come with crying and moments of going back to self-loathing, but I came to a realization I didn't want to live life as a victim anymore. And it's a mentality. It's a mentality. Sure, bad things happened to me. I had some challenges with childhood and in addition to the sexual abuse and emotional, and I'm dyslexic and all these things that came along with that. And it's like, look, how can I turn this to my advantage? And especially when I started to share it with other people, like you said, emotions went, me too. I know exactly what you went through, what you felt and how you think about yourself. It was like, phew, it's got a purpose.
Right. And that's something that is fascinating. I remember, at one point when I was younger, I was thinking of going into like a seminary, right? Because I'm very spiritually inclined. Mm-hmm. And I remember reading this book and they said that they had this time where they could ask an anonymous question to like the leaders of the seminary. And they said the question that came up the most was, I feel like a terrible person and I don't feel like I'm good enough to do this type of work. Wow. And so they found out that all these people were feeling like, hey, I'm terrible. I've got too much darkness in me. Like, I know my secrets. You know what I mean? Like, I can present to the world in a certain way and I can show the world a certain way, but I feel like I'm like a piece of crap, you know? And even these kids that are dedicating their life to seminary, like they're probably on the spectrum. They're probably very good people, you know, for the most part. And so for them to feel like that, you know, what hope do we have? And so when you really start talking about like, yeah, I feel that way too, I think it opens up the door for people to be a little more compassionate on themselves and have that self-reflective attitude that says, yeah, you know, I've done some things wrong. I've done some things with ill intent. I've done some things that aren't necessarily positive or whatever. But I can look at those things and say, yeah, they weren't right for me, but I can also look at them with some compassion and some grace and really be able to grow past it, you know, which I think is the first step in shadow work.
Yeah, I agree. And really what I don't know if you get this across, client, like, what are we really going to learn if we did everything right?
Yeah,
absolutely nothing.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. Very true. Very, very true. And we learn from our suffering, you know, but some people learn quicker than others. And I think the more aware you are, the quicker you do learn. And so my goal is to avoid as much suffering as possible. And I remember when I was really studying like enlightenment and what it meant, you know, because on the Eastern philosophy side, I got really into that. And you kind of think of like the term nirvana. I don't know if you've heard, you know, aware of that, or like you're going to reach the stage. And to me, what I kind of came to the conclusion was enlightenment is the end of self-created suffering. That to me is enlightened. When somebody stops creating suffering for themselves, which sounds like such a simple thing. It's not like this state of, you know, I never experience pain or I never experience, you know, negativity or whatever, but you're done creating it for yourself. Because a lot of times we self-sabotage because we do hate ourselves inside, right? And of course, the criminals that I speak with on a weekly basis, those people are expert self-sabotagers. They're experts at hurting themselves because they feel like they're worth that. You know, they feel like they're worth a negative life and they feel like they're punished. You know, it's just like the kid who gets punished and he realizes he did something wrong. So he goes and runs to the corner to punish himself before he can get punished. And a lot of times we set up negative circumstances in our life, whether it be health problems, financial problems, relationship problems. We do that to punish ourselves in a big way. And the reason we do that is because we hate ourselves, because we never were able to really look at ourselves with compassion in the first place. And so I really think if we're looking at the root, you know, it's like a fungi there, you know, mushrooms are everywhere, but at the root of the mushrooms, there's one major fungi that is actually producing all these different things. And the mushrooms could be like addiction, could be like self-sabotage, could be like relationship issues. You know, these are the mushrooms that a lot of people focus on. But if you get down to the bottom of the fungi, it's a level of self-hatred. It's a level of not loving yourself. It's not being compassionate with yourself. And if you can really uproot that, all these other problems magnificently, you know, decrease on a huge level. And so really, I think it comes down to self-identity, who you think you are, and how much you truly love yourself and can love yourself with a form of grace and a form of self-forgiveness and a form of compassion. And the more love you have for that, those are going to manifest in a beautiful life, as opposed to, you know, problems that you're self-creating for yourself.
Yeah. I've never heard that mushroom analogy before. That's a really good one. I like that. Joe, this has been a blast. Like, hey, I could keep going. And so this means we're going to have to do it again, or a follow-up bonus. Sure. And
absolutely, brother. Absolutely.
I personally would like to keep in touch and everything else, because I'm like, oh, I got a lot more to learn from this guy. But if people want to connect with you, reach out. What's the easiest way?
So just DM me. I answer all my DMs. And I'm Mental Health Fitness Dad on Instagram. And just send me a message, even if it's just like, hey, this resonated with me, or hey, this is, you know, something I struggle with too, because I like people to feel connected, you know, and for me, it helps me. Sometimes I need the encouragement as well, you know. So if somebody comes in and says, hey, this really changed my perspective, it's like, oh, wow, like that's the pat on the back I needed that day, you know, to feel like I can keep going. And so never hesitate to reach out, but just shoot me a message. So.
All right. I got your link in the podcast description there. So please not only connect with Joe, give him a follow. And I'll definitely want to reach
out.
I noticed the physical health side is still a big struggle for me for whatever reason. I don't know why. So there's still something up in that brain that's like, you know, you used to have abs. You're not worthy of it anymore. But here we go. How about some random questions? These are all for fun here. First one, let's see. If you could have one superpower, what would it be and why?
Oh, man. Great question. God, I should have been prepared for this. I would say to look through other people's eyes, to really, truly see through other people's views and to get their perspective on things, because I think my relationships would be phenomenal at that point. If I could really put myself in other people's shoes in a high degree and not just like sort of think I know what they're thinking, but literally think, you know, be able to see that, which obviously would be a little intense. It would require a lot of compassion, because I'm sure people, you know, some people don't think the nicest things about me, and that's life, right? Like we all do that to people. So, but I think to really be able to see how other people see the world and view my interaction with that, I think it would be a very good thing to kind of speed up my growth process, if you will.
Yeah. I've never heard anyone say that. I love that. That's gnarly. That would take a lot of inner strength to be able to do.
I would need some shadow work before I did that. Cause you know, yeah, sometimes you don't want to know what people are thinking, but yeah.
What's one thing people might be surprised to learn about you, a hobby or an interest or something? Like, I build Legos. That's like my thing.
Oh, right on. Heck yeah, man. You know, I guess like the whole real estate thing, you know, I'm a big real estate investor and I've got multiple businesses. I've kind of had a big, a lot of success in that world. And so I think, you know, I talk about it a little bit, but I think for me personally, that's like, it's something that a lot of people are surprised to know, like that we have like a pretty decent portfolio and we've learned that whole world. And for me, it's just like a alternative way to invest and stuff. So, you know, we could go down a whole nother rabbit hole on that at some point, because there's definitely a lot of things that it's not rocket science, but it definitely requires, like, it's a certain mentality that you have when you get into that world to figure out, which it sounds like your brother's into that as well, and learning how to kind of work in that world. So I think that might be something somewhat interesting that people may not know about me. So.
Yeah, bonus episode. We already got the topic.
Nice, nice. Yeah.
You're stuck on a deserted island. You have one movie and one music artist's greatest hits. What are they?
Oh God, I would say for the movie, I'm not too sure. I'll have to think about that. Maybe like I don't know. But like for the music artists, I think I would pick like The Cure. I love The Cure. You know, I grew up on with them, and they're so like, they just trigger your emotional state in such a positive way, you know, and I love Robert Smith and all the stuff they put out. So I probably would pick The Cure. For the movie, I guess I would pick It's a Beautiful Life. Because that's such a wonderful, that's the one where the guy ends up in like a concentration camp, and he ends up creating a, in his own mind, where he feels like it's a game that him and his son are playing, and he's able to kind of take a really negative circumstance and turn it into a positive way that actually enables him to survive that experience. And so I would probably need that encouragement on a deserted island. So
yeah, absolutely. Yeah, or if it was a book, something from Viktor Frankl, right? I mean, there.
Yeah. Oh God, that was a powerful one. Yeah, for sure. Ooh,
yeah. All right, one more random one here. You could travel anywhere in time, but you'd have to stay there. When and where would it be, and why?
So this is a good one, because I would pick right now, and the reason I say that, and I'm so, you know, emphatic about that, is people are always talking about like, the world is so terrible, the world is this, the world is that. And I work with a lot of older clients and stuff that are kind of in their 60s, 70s and stuff, and in my other business, and they've kind of got this, the world's gone to hell in a handbasket. And I'm like, what world are you talking about? Like, where would you rather go back to? Like, would you rather go back 100 years ago when you die of scurvy and you die of, or whatever, like, and you live to 40, you know? Would you rather go back to 1700s when you could get your head chopped off? Would you rather go back to the, you know, like, in what time would you rather exist than now, if you really logically think about it? And, or maybe 1950s, where there's still racism, you know, hardcore racism, and there's still all this other stuff you're dealing with. And, you know, like, it's like, I would pick right now. Like, I would pick this. Obviously, we have our problems and we're not perfect, but we live in such a beautiful time where we have access to information. We have so many ideas that we can really latch onto. We can have so many beautiful things that we can, you know, and it's really like pick your own adventure in this world. So I would pick now, as opposed to, you know, going back into the time of segregation, or going back to the time of where we lived to where you're 40, or going back to the time when, you know, people were, you know, you had a king and the king just made a decision. Like, there's really no other time I'd rather pick than now. I feel like we're in a beautiful time, and it's all our perspective and how we look at it. So,
yeah, man, mic drop. I agree with you. I agree with cool, you. Brother. Hey Joe, man, absolute pleasure. Folks, please click that link in the bio, follow Joe, reach out if you want to. This is where you get the final thought, anything you want to lend a word of advice, some inspiration, whatever it is.
I think the biggest thing, if you got anything from this, is just have self-compassion. You know, make sure you are giving yourself grace, make sure you're giving yourself love, make sure you are forgiving yourself. Because the only way to bless the future is to forgive your past, you know, and to, because if you're still holding on to regret and pain from your past, you're going to continue to manifest that in the future. And the only way to really bless the people around you is to look at yourself with a ton of compassion, a ton of grace, and say, hey, I'm a spiritual being having a human experience, and I'm going to mess things up. I'm going to make mistakes. I'm imperfect. And as you look at it from that perspective, it helps you kind of let that go. Because if you don't let that go, it's going to really manifest itself in different ways in your future. And you're going to manifest a lot of self-suffering because you don't love yourself. So I think just having self-compassion would be the last thing I would say.
Absolutely.